We're going to jump down now to number 27 because Aaron's made the trek down here and on the phone, we have to drive back down tomorrow. And I think that, you know, that'll probably take us, you know, 30 minutes or better to get through number 27, and then we'll just cut it off for the day and we'll finish up tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's me again. Actually, we're going to have Andrew Norton, one of our senior big game biologists, give you a short presentation, a little bit of information, and then we'll chat some more and open it up for questions.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Olson, Commission Secretary Roebling. I'm Andrew Norton, Senior Big Game Biologist out of Rapid City here, and today we'll be talking about contingency licenses. So a little background on the plan. You've heard a little bit earlier today, but these contingency licenses were established in 2014 and 15 when we were writing the elk management plan. And what they were was a response to short-term drought. Importantly, this isn't looking at long-term drought. It's not looking at our overall population objective for the Black Hills, which is 6,000 to 8,000 elk. So, for example, these contingency licenses aren't supposed to significantly affect the direction we go away from this objective of 6,000 to 8,000. They're kind of more of an isolated situation where we deal with perhaps too many elk that might be coming into competition with forage when we have low production in certain years and again, short-term drought conditions. So what we did from the elk management plan was establish an administrative rule, and we wanted to put a cap on this of a maximum of 20% of the antlerless licenses in the Black Hills for a specific unit that could be allocated towards the contingency licenses. The reason being what I just said, we don't want to kill all the elk in a certain unit and get significantly far away from our overall population objective. What we basically look at is summer range conditions, and we use an NRCS model that I'll get into. Looking at production, and we also need the Forest Service staff to determine if that model is accurate or not. So, like I said, we meet with Forest Service staff 2 to 3 times per year, and what we discuss is primarily this model that's developed by the NRCS. Some of their members were there as well. We met a few weeks ago and looked at the model that had results through about August 15th. Now, this model runs and looks at precipitation from the last 2 years. It's heavily weighted towards the last year and specifically towards individual growing season. It's also capped at months where you have significantly high precipitation. In those months, obviously, there's going to be a lot of runoff, so it's not necessarily going to be great. So they try to account for that, calibrated with clipping data, and it's also customized so it applies to a specific elk management unit. All right, so the table that we established, again, this came up a little bit today, is based on that NRCS forage production model. It's basically a one-way table. We look at what growing season conditions would be below optimal, which would be 100%. So basically, you have four categories, and the best category would obviously be like 90 to 100%. So maybe slight mild drought, and in those situations, we wouldn't allocate any contingency licenses. Once we get below that, which we have across a lot of the states this year, we may look at starting to allocate some licenses. One important thing to note here is we round up to 5 licenses, so you'll see when I get to the table, when we actually recommend 5 licenses, it actually ends up being a lot more than 5% of the antlerless licenses in that unit. So again, important to note that this is just a one-way table. It looks at maybe giving a little relief from drought when we have lower than optimal conditions. It doesn't go the other way. So 2 years ago, really good forage production. We We flew an elk survey that year, and we were 500 elk below 7,000, which would be the middle of our range. So we were managing towards the lower side of elk. In the northern Black Hills, we were 40% below what we were in 2016 in two of our major management units. And in those units, arguably, we had very, very few elk and very good growing conditions. But we didn't do anything to increase elk in those units, and that's going to be important for what I get into next. So the other thing to note on this table is there's three categories. It depends on the unit objective. As I said, we're 40% below in a couple of units in the northern hills. So we're going to want to increase elk in that unit. We're going to be less likely to want to allocate contingency licenses there, whereas in the southern hills, we're about 90% above what we were in 2016. In those units, we actually want to decrease elk. So if you think we're above objective in a unit and you have drought conditions, you're going to want to give out more licenses. That's why you can see on the left side of the table, we're more liberal with giving out these licenses. So what do we look like for forage production throughout the state? I wanted to start with this because I think most folks that aren't living in the Black Hills, especially not living in the southern Black Hills, would look at it and say, we've had a significant drought across the state this year. And that's very much so true. You can see this map is almost all red, indicating significant severe drought. And if you're living in the central part of the state, you've got terrible growing conditions. The Black Hills have certainly been an anomaly this year, especially the southern Black Hills. This was confirmed by Forest Service staff saying that they had really timely rains, and actually they're at close to 100% of production in the southeastern part of the Black Hills. So how does that relate to what we see specifically in the Black Hills? You see that little green spot showing up in the legend. If you can read it there, it's got the unit number on the top, and then next is the population objective for that specific unit. And then at the bottom is the percent of forage production. So that unit I said that was up 90% from 2016 to 2020, where we have a decrease objective, is actually at 92% production from the NRCS model that Game Fish and Parks staff has nothing to do with. We just simply take the numbers from the NRCS. Again, Forest Service staff agreed with that number. And in that unit where we do have a lot of antlerless licenses, because we're at 92%, we get into the decision support table here, and you can see we don't allocate any contingency licenses in that unit. Now compare that to some of the units in the northern part of the hills where we're at 84% in Unit 1B or 82% in Unit 2B. Because we have an increased objective, both of those units in particular were down 40%, so we have much fewer elk there than we really want. We don't give out any contingency licenses, even though there are drought conditions up there of 82%, 84%. So the result of this is you kind of get a sweet spot in the middle of the hills where we have to maintain objectives. Again, we're kind of in the middle of that, being conservative and liberal and giving out these contingency licenses. And you can see we give out here this number of 20 licenses across specific units. Again, it's tailored to the individual elk management unit because we're trying to be pretty specific with where we harvest these elk. Obviously, 20 elk across the entire hill seems like a fairly insignificant number, but I will point out 2 years ago when we flew, we were at 6,500 elk, and our objective is between 6,000 and 8,000. Again, in a lot of areas where we saw maybe lack of forage production in the hills, we are below objective. So arguably, for a while, we've been below objective in those units and had more forage available for cattle. With that, I'll take any questions.
Mr. Beese here. I kind of agree with some of what you're saying, but the northern hills is more drier than the rest of the hills, and that's where the tooses are experienced some cuts, I believe. You know, I run in the Mystic and Hell Canyon, the southern part of northern hills, and we don't have no cuts on our fish permits, but maybe further north there are. I know we're under projections for animals in those units, but why are we killing elk down south where we have adequate forage? Why don't we take those 20 and put those all up north? I know we're under where we want to be, but that's where the dam is being done.
Yeah,
Mayor, Commissioner Beasley. So a couple comments. One, as Andrew indicated, we do coordinate and consult with the Forest Service, and so what they brought to the table, an indication of permits and those folks up there, is that no one at this point will be coming off of the permit early. Now, certainly there's another month or so here, we'll see what happens, but, you know, that was what was relayed to us. Now, I understand what Mr. Thompson is saying, and that some folks maybe didn't bring their full allocation out onto that permit to begin with in anticipation of dry conditions. But, you know, that is one thing that we take into consideration, is how many of those folks are having to pull their cattle off of their forest permit as it relates to these contingency licenses. So I would say that. And, you know, the other thing that I would want to talk about here is that table and the development that went into it. So as Andrew mentioned, quite a bit of discussion and activity around that. And you heard Mr. Thompson allude to that. And, you know, some changes over time. And so this NRCS model, for example, they continue to work on that, beef it up, add additional data, and get a more accurate, if they can, throughout the Black Hills. And so we've made those changes and adjusted as we've moved through time. It's not perfect by any means, and I won't tell you that, but it certainly is a good tool for us to use to help make a decision. And again, it's in response to short-term drought conditions. So that's part of what Andrew was alluding to. You know, when we're looking at more longer-term drought conditions, we handle that and address that through tag allocations in the regular season. This is meant to be an immediate response to those short-term conditions. So if things persist and continue here, then we'll be asking our managers to manage that population on that low end of the range, closer to that 6,000 health. So I'm kind of working all around your question, Commissioner Peace, but, you know, some of the units that these licenses are being issued in, 4 and 9 are great examples. Those are the units that are east of Custer State Park and Wind Cave National Park. Those are almost entirely private property in areas where, you know, we're currently issuing 40 antlerless licenses. So when you add those 5 in, they are a bit more significant than it looks like on the entire Black Hills. And so I certainly wouldn't want to pull those out of there and put them up into, you know, a unit like Unit 1, where we have quite a bit more public land. But certainly that is one way to look at it.
I haven't heard of any complaints from any of the agriculture people because of dry conditions, wanting more elk relief up there removed. Last I knew, they were on the main tree in those units to the south.
Mr.
So
Chair,
why put those down there?
Yeah, so some of the folks I'm talking to, they're certainly, we're starting to see bigger groups, and they're starting to have reflections of back 8 or 10 years ago when they had some big groups of elk causing a lot of damage. And so, yeah, I won't tell you that everybody in Unit 4 or 9 is complaining, but we are certainly starting to hear a few more calls of damage this year and addressing those complaints. But yeah, is it unit-wide? No, not by any means, but there certainly are folks that want to see less elk, or at least get ahead of it, I should say.
Other questions? Mr. Spring.
Is the population still bad in the southwest? That place a year or two ago, was something still very high, or how is that?
Yeah, the figure's not up there, but in the northern part of Unit 3, just south of Custer, we have a maintain objective, a lot more public land there. But in the southern part of that unit, where there's a lot of private, definitely wanted to decrease numbers a little bit down there. So working on that, but where you have a unit with a lot of private land, it's kind of tough to reduce numbers when there's struggles with getting access to everywhere.
And Mr. Chair, if I could add to that, Commissioner Spring, so we had the individual that came and spoke with us last year, and I know you have him on your mind. So 5 of these licenses will go into that unit, and of course last year we did double those antlerless licenses, you all did, I should say, and we've been working close with him to try to put some pressure on those elk. Of course, as you move further south, we still do have a good contingent of elk, and we've issued out a significant number of antlerless licenses to try to address that. Now, I will tell you that our regional supervisor here, Mike Zazowski, he is getting some oh, comments and pressure, I'll say, from the divide, as I call it, down there. So we do have a contingent of landowners down there that really like the elk, and they want to see more elk and bigger bulls. And then we have folks that are experiencing some extreme damage. And I would call it, when you look across the board at all the elk damage that I look at, some of the worst is in the Southern Hills there down Minnetonka Junction, down in that area. And so we're in a tough position down there. Mike is going to do a great job and go down and meet with those folks and try to talk to them and walk through it. But it's a tough spot to be in because we think we have high densities of elk. We want to address that because of that damage. But it's great, too, to have folks that like elk and want that opportunity. But it's tough to be in that middle ground in that tough spot. So,
any other questions? If you know, we use this NRCS data as kind of a third party backstop to deciding what the allocation would be, correct? If we weren't to use that, how would you develop these numbers? If you weren't using NRCS data, what would the plan be? I mean, obviously, we've done that. What would you do?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Great question. And, you know, let me just talk about typically how we address drought and poor forage and habitat conditions, and that is through regular season allocations, like I spoke a moment ago. So what we would look at is kind of the big picture and longer term. So if this persists into next year, we're going to look to issue out or ask you to issue out more antlerless licenses and bring those populations down. If we didn't have the NRCS data, we'd really just kind of be guessing, to be quite honest. We would work with the Forest Service, ask them what they're seeing out there, what kind of conditions are they experiencing. We do try to reach out to some of our landowner partners and ask them what they're experiencing. And then we just rely on field staff and local staff's evaluation of what's going on. But it would be there'd be a lot more anecdotal information that we'd be using to try to issue out these licenses. I guess what I'm saying is it's very nice to have that information, and it's backed with data and information that they're collecting. Again, I won't say it's perfect, but it's nice to have that to help us with that anecdotal information and kind of tie everything together.
As a follow-up to that, so obviously we don't have the staff, the boots on the ground, to go out and check every one of these allotments out, but we do have people there that do, and that's the people that rent those parcels. Is the first opportunity that they are, as the, you know, producer side, is the first opportunity they get to see what our numbers are being proposed when they get caught here, or do we talk to them throughout the process?
Mr. Chair, so no, we don't talk to them throughout the process. I wouldn't say that. Some of them, yes, you know, we do have interactions with some of our landowners. A lot of that's centered around some damage they might be experiencing and such. We do rely heavily, again, on those range conservationists with the Forest Service to, you know, certainly they're talking to those permittees and have some real direct information there that they share with us. Beyond that, we do reach out. So, as an example, I reached out to the Stock Growers, the Cattlemen's Association, and then, of course, Mr. Thompson with the Spearfish Livestock Association. So we do some of that, but I won't tell you that we go out and contact each and every one of those folks.
Yeah. Do you think
that this year the depredation also being set out every year, the damage is going to be higher this year, or is it going to be lower than this year?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Spring, I would say it's going to be the same. Yeah, you know, just looking back the last couple of years, we should be in about the ballpark where we've been. As far as, I think you're asking about food plot payments and stackyard projects, things like that.
Some of the damage, like on the poles and that, there's quite a list of landowners that were putting that to damage on this one. It was going to be going up for the same thing.
Yeah, and I would say the same, and one of the reasons for that is those are some of those chronic areas where there's some real damage that we work with them year in and year out, and so it's kind of floating along in the same spot. One thing we are trying to do is direct more regular season hunters to those areas and try to put more pressure on them in the regular season. So in a perfect world, in a good world, we'll kill more of those elk off in those localized areas. and then start to see less expense and activity there at those particular landowners.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we heard from Mr. Thompson. Thank you for coming today and sharing your comments. And you visited about reaching out to some of the organizations in the Northern Hills. I'm just curious as to who else maybe you've heard from, whether it be producers in the Northern Hills or across the state that are experiencing some of the same things that Mr. Thompson is.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Risler. Yeah, so the other folks, as an example, I reached out to Eric Jennings with the Cattlemen's Association. And so certainly he has concerns as well. He couldn't be here today. He's busy at home. But, you know, he would like to talk about this decision tool as well. That's what he expressed to me. And my understanding of what we were talking about is that he would like to see more tags issued out as well, digital tags. And so that is a commitment I'll make here, and I did, Mr. Jennings, is that I would like to sit down with those gentlemen again, Mr. Thompson and Mr. Jennings, and probably the James Halverson and the stock growers as well, and just take a good look at this table and make sure it's working how it was intended, and just have a good discussion about it. Is there any tweaks we could make to make it help us with decisions in a better way? I'm not saying that absolutely means changes, but I think certainly it's worth discussing with them and taking some additional input.
Commissioner Beans here. So I understand that if we go into an extended drought for another year, so we come back, we wait next summer to get recommendations, so Game and Fish cannot respond to that till the fall hunting season, where the producers are experiencing their loss up front. So how does the harvesting and ML help them with their forage if we're retroactive behind the situation that's happening?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Beast, you're right, and that's exactly one of the reasons that we added these contingency licenses into the plan, is that we wanted a more immediate response. You know, one thing that we've learned through time is that we can kill elk. We did it in about around 2005 to 2007, we issued out licenses and we drove the population down to the point where the commission at the time was receiving a lot of comments, a lot of folks coming in asking what the heck we did to the elk herd. And of course, with that, then we're dropping licenses. And so we've certainly learned that if we want to, we can kill elk and we can make a difference to the point where we hear pretty adamantly from that other side. The thing that we can't do is put them back out there as quickly as say someone raising cattle could. So, you know, certainly we could have a more immediate response. We could issue out more licenses and kill more elk. I'm confident of that. What that would mean, though, is it would take a considerably longer time to build that elk herd back up. But hopefully I answered your question, Commissioner Beats. I mean, if we want a more immediate response, it would be to issue out licenses here rather than waiting to see what happens with the drought and moving through time.
Commissioner Locken.
Commissioner Locken here. What are you expecting the elk herd to do this fall? When it are they going to move? Are they going to move further south, or will they stay where they're at? Do you expect any changes there on a dry year?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Locken, let me answer that, and then I'm going to ask Andrew to talk a little bit about what we expect the population to do as far as what we're doing with modeling and stuff. But where those elk are now, generally, they're going to be in the same areas come hunting season. And then what we'll see as we move through hunting season is those elk will start to, the big bulls will peel off, and those cows and calves will start to group up into some large groups, and then they'll go to the wintering ranges. A lot of those, the predominance of the elk population will end up in the Jasper Burn area and largely on public land there in Unit 2. And that's a good thing. You know, they're not off on private property causing damage, but we do see some large groups of elk that congregate there on that public land in Unit 2. Like I mentioned, maybe Andrew, just briefly about where the population is going.
Yeah, so in general, we're looking to stabilize the herd throughout the hills. Like I said, the last flight we had 6,500, just over 6,500 estimated, and our goal is 6,000 to 8,000. But what we saw was in the southern hills, numbers were way up, in the northern hills, numbers were way down. So we're actively trying to increase elk in the northern hills and then decrease them in the southern hills. And I think that's some of this conflict here, is that it's kind of counterintuitive. We have drought that happens to be in the northern hills, but we actually want to increase elk there. So it could also be looked at as it's good because our numbers were down there and we came into the drought and we just got lucky. But certainly they're going to move. I mean, if there's nothing to browse, they're going to move somewhere else. So they could shift around a little bit if some areas chronically overbrowse, but obviously we try to mitigate that as much as we can with manipulating elk numbers and manipulating cattle grazing.
Mr. Sharker,
has development in the last 10 to 15 years affected any foraging opportunity for our elk herd?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Sharp, ooh, that's a tough one. Certainly, a lot of these cities in the Black Hills are encouraging economic development, and that includes bringing boats in and, in some cases, subdividing these meadow areas in particular where our deer and elk like to forage and spend time. So I guess my answer would be, and Andrew, feel free to jump in, but, certainly as those areas get developed, that is a disturbance. You'll see elk in particular move out of those areas, deer not so much. But I can't say that we have any data to suggest that that's made a significant impact on our population in recent times here. But absolutely, disturbance will move elk out of areas, including development.
Any other questions, comments? I guess I would say this, in the 5 years I've been on here, it's been my practice not to micromanage staff or any of our jobs up here. But I think that we do have an opportunity, where public trust is concerned, that I would just suggest that as we're putting these plans together each year before we bring it out and go up to the public, there's different opportunities I think that we should be utilizing those conversations with the producers out in the field and having more contact with them. So it's like not a surprise when we roll the number out. I just think that that's an important component for me. I mean, I'd love to see all of our elk numbers come up as well, but I understand that there's another side to the coin as well. So that's just my only suggestion.
Mr. Chair, you sparked a thought in my head, if I may. I totally agree with what you're saying, and we will do that as much as we possibly can. One of the things that we run into is with this model, the later we run it or the closer we run it up to this meeting, the better, because it's more real-time information. And we've had times in the past where we ran it and things looked okay, and we go through the month of August and things start to deteriorate. So part of the issue we're up against there is that we get this information. Literally, we had it last week, start frantically calling people. That's not to say that we can't go out and make some more contacts, but it does leave staff very little time to make contacts before we come to you. But point taken, and we'll make sure to do a better job at that. Yep.
Questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, if I may. We are also planning to meet those landowners down in the south. Michael Sowski's putting a meeting together. If there's any commissioners that are interested in joining us for that meeting, I am going to be attending that meeting as well with the producers. Mike, just wanted to make sure that these commissioners knew that that opportunity was there, and we urge you to come down to that meeting to talk with producers about elk damage. So.
Mr. Chair, Tom Kirshner, Director of Wildlife Division. Just want to add one more thing that John just mentioned about the data coming in just a short amount of time ago that we got it. For some of the other commissioners, just for another little piece of history, we actually changed or modified, adjusted, whatever word you want to use, the actual commission schedule to address the issue and topic of elk contingency licenses. Prior, you used to have a meeting in August and none in September, and we flipped it to address the elk contingency licenses so that we moved that conversation back a little bit more, had more of that concrete information, in particular the information that Andrew talked about that is used in that table, to bring the best possible data that we could gather from those resources and that effort to this process and the conversation with the commission. So I just wanted to share that one piece of information that we actually adjusted the schedule specifically for this topic to have the best information and going into the fall to know even more and better what those conditions are out there.
Anything else? Well, it's an actionable item. I think that you'd like to, your recommendation would be that the commission adopt the recommended numbers that you put forward.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that would be where we sit, is we'd like to stick to the plan, which we'll talk about here soon in that decision table. But I'll say again, and I appreciate what Mr. Thompson said, and I think he was talking about me when he said he kind of likes some of the game and fish staff. But I say that because I do intend to reach out to Mr. Thompson next week, and we'll chat more, and then I'll set up a meeting with those folks, like I mentioned, so that we can further discuss this and just make sure it's working like it was intended to, and see if we can come up with some different thoughts on it. But yeah, with that, we'd ask that you take some action on this, please.
Sure.
We have the motion to approve.
Second.
We have second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Right. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. With that, I think we'll stand in recess until tomorrow at 8 o'clock. We'll go live again and we'll pick up the rest of the agenda then. Safe travel.